98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
This is the main event you've all been waiting for. Introducing the undefeated, the undisputed best boxing show in the world. Hailing across Essex, East London, Essex, coming to you live from Phoenix 98 FM. Welcome to On the Ropes.
Hello, I'm Carl Frampton, and you're listening to On the Ropes with Mark and Charlie Foley.
Hello, guys.
Hello, guys, and welcome to On the Ropes. We're bringing you another lockdown special, and we're so pleased to say this week we're joined by a former Commonwealth, British, two-time European and world middleweight champion, Darren Barker. Darren competed between 2004 to 2013, and more recently, you've seen him as a first-class boxing pundit on Sky Sports. Darren, firstly, thanks for joining us today, and how are you keeping?
Pleasure.
How's your family doing?
Oh, all good. What a lovely intro that was. You've just made my head slightly bigger. Well, thanks, mate. We're same as everyone, getting a little bit bored and agitated, but we understand the nature of what's going on. But yeah, it's been, to be honest, it's been nice. I'm so busy usually. It's been nice to spend a bit of time with the family. Trying to take the positives from it.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it has been a draining period for everyone, but hopefully we're through it very, very soon. Darren, I just want to ask you firstly, it's Mark, obviously, and thank you again for joining us today. First question for me, really. You started your career at Finchley in New Barnet, obviously with the Olivers, a great club with a great tradition. I mean, was boxing something you always wanted to try out as a kid?
Yeah. Funny, I'm just round my brother's house at the minute, and the reason I started boxing is the man downstairs, my dad. He was ABA champion. He won the junior ABAs and the senior ABAs in the same calendar year. I think there's only two people that have done it. And then I was born and messed up his plans of becoming a boxer. So I guess I always done it to sort of make him proud. Not that he ever pushed me into it or anything like that. I just think naturally as someone to make their dad proud, and that's something I wanted to do, and that's the reason I've got into it. And like anyone who's competed in the ring, in boxing, will tell you, you know, that feeling of winning is like no other. So once I had my first fight, I won the first fight, and that was it. I was completely hooked. And yeah, it's just boxing is such a big part of my life. You know, I love it. I love it so much.
Hello, Darren. It's Charlie.
Hello, mate.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Top man. So, second question. I'm Mark's sidekick. I'm his twin brother. We're big boxing enthusiasts. You know, we used to do a bit of amateurs, and we do this weekly show updating everyone in East London and Essex, as you could probably hear by the intro, trying to keep them updated with the world of boxing. And we like to get people like yourself on, you know, and it's a real reward.
And can I just quickly say what a great job you're doing? I remember coming on years ago with Tony Sims, a long, long time ago. I mean, I was a novice pro, and I must say, you know, I try my best to listen to the show, lads, and you do a fantastic job.
Oh, thank you very much. That's a really, really nice touch here. I mean, yeah, we've done a little bit of boxing many years ago, and we just keep it going because we just love the sport like yourself, and we love updating people. Just, you know, we get quite a few listeners, yeah. So we like updating them on the boxing, but we do like to get people on, and, you know, what an honour. You're our first world champion, Darren, so that's a real honour for us.
I'm privileged. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So, yeah, my second question was, you know, you stayed with Finchley for a few years. You decided to move, you know, not just round the corner, really, you know, a bit of a trek over to the East End, Repton, a club that we know well because we boxed at Lion Boys, who were in the shadow of Repton, round the corner there in Hoxton. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, I mean, a big journey for you. I mean, tell us what that was like, you know, transitioning away from Finchley over to such a big club like Repton.
What happened, lads, was my dad boxed for the Repton, won all his titles there, and I was at Finchley, and no disrespect to Finchley. Do you know what? I was quite an immature kid. You know, I got to about 15, and I was getting beat. Not on talent. It was more because they were just a lot more mature than me. So I was getting overpowered a little bit, and I lost three on the bounce for Finchley, and I thought, well, I've got to make a change. I've got to do something different. I've got to somehow try and progress. And I guess it was always inevitable that I was going to go to Repton. You know, it was always something I wanted to do. I always wanted to put the green and gold of Repton on. And that's what I'd done. I remember getting the train on my own. I didn't tell no one I was going up there. I asked Finchley for my card back. Give me my card. And I went up to the Repton. One of the junior matchmaker at the time, Kelvin Wingham, who we all know really well, the family, he welcomed me down there. And the rest is history. You know, again, without sound, Finchley were brilliant. I went to Las Vegas with him twice. You know, first time I'd ever been to America, and you know, I owe them a lot. But it was like going from school, like primary school, to university. It was just a different kettle of fish. You know, me being a big fan of amateur boxing at the time, I still am. But you know, I was starstruck going down there and seeing all the Harrison, Courtney Pryor, Danny Appy, who you mentioned, Tony Cizé. You know, all of these fighters. I remember thinking, wow, you know, I've cracked it here. You know, they welcomed me in, and yeah, it was just like, it was always exciting walking through the doors at Repton. You know, the great Tony Burns, you know, he'd always had news for you. You know, he'd say, Barker, in the office, get in the office, you go in the office, and you know, he'd be saying, oh, you're representing England in Hungary, or you're going to the World Championships, or something like that. And it was just, I would honestly say the best time of my boxing life was representing Repton Boxing Club. Yeah, I'm so proud. My brother, obviously, you probably mention him later on, but he boxed for the Repton, and they've actually called it the Repton, the Gary Barker Gymnasium, which is so nice of him. And when you walk in, there's a picture of me, my dad, and my brother all on the wall. And you know, it's I can't speak highly enough of Repton. It means an awful lot to me and my family.
Well, Darren, that was going to be one of my questions, actually. At Repton, would you say, obviously, this is where you excelled? You went on to become an England international. That led on to wearing a vest for your country. I mean, you know, Repton, I guess, brought out the best of you, right?
Absolutely. Look, I've said it a lot when I'm doing punditry or anything like that, because it's true. And success breeds success. You know, you walk through them doors at Repton and you see the wall of fame there, all the people that represented England, and you want to be on that wall. You want to be the best. My dad was on the wall and I wanted to be on the wall. And what brings you on is the caliber of sparring. You know, I was sparring with Danny Appy, who was the best in the country, double ABA champion, England representative. And he brought me on to another level. He really did. You know, he taught me what it was like to be a very good fighter, a seasoned fighter. And you know, I won the NABC at 17, I think it was. Off the back of that, I went in the senior ABAs. I lost an account back in the semi-finals. And off the back of that, I got picked to represent England in the tough multinations in Hungary. And it was a real tough one. And I had three fights. I won a gold medal in my first three fights for England. And off the back of that, I got picked for the Commonwealth Games, where I actually was Danny Appy's roommate. Me and him were roommates in the Commonwealth Village. It was brilliant. And there was four Repton boys, funny enough. There was me, Danny, Courtney Fryer, and Tony Cizé represent Sierra Leone at welterweight. So, yeah, you know, Repton took me to another level. Absolutely, you know. Tony Burns, everyone there. Just what a special place.
And do you get back there much, Darren? Is it somewhere that you get back to?
I was on the committee there, but because I'm so busy, I do struggle. But I mean, I speak to the chairman, Dave Robinson, all the time. I do get down there a fair bit. You know, I think it's important to sort of give back, and if I can get down there and give the kids, you know, GM up a little bit, I do try. I haven't been down there for a little bit, but it will be my promise to the club as soon as this blows over to get down there a little bit more. And look, I'd love to one day help coaching down there, but I appreciate how disciplined you've got to be a coach. You know, the kids and the adults down there, the juniors and the seniors, they they massively rely on you. They need you to be consistent. And at the minute, I just can't do that because I'm busy. But one day, I'd love to be a coach down there and give back that way.
Good stuff. And I just want to touch upon the Commonwealth, sir, Darren. You mentioned 2002. I mean, going into the Commonwealths, am I right in saying you weren't particularly favoured? I mean, you were more or less an unknown, really, because
was it they
were pushing for Lenny Dawes, and then whatever happened, they went for you, and you were an unknown, really.
Spot on. Yeah, it's exactly right. You've done your own work. Well, basically, what happened was I got to the semis of the ABA. Lenny Dawes had already won them and represented England, and I won. I went to that tough multi-nations in Hungary, and it was a real tough tournament. You know, there were Russians, all sorts there. And I remember I beat, you might remember him, Yuri Romanov. He beat Bobby Banzi and Scott Murray, or Steve Murray, was it? I can't remember. He was European champion. And
bit of a tough nut, wasn't it? Tough nut.
Yeah, I beat him in the final. And I think with Tony Burns' influence, he knew all the England selectors and coaches, and I think he kind of got me in off the back of that. And it was, you know, I have to say, a good move on the part of the England selectors, because obviously I went on to win gold. Yeah, I wasn't unknown. I remember going in the, there was just before the tournament started, we got invited to this media day. It was literally the day before the game started. And I remember all the boxers sat on these little benches in and around the ring. And one by one, all the boxers got called out to do various radio and TV interviews or paper, you know, interviews with magazine papers. And I was the only one that didn't get picked. I remember sat on the bench and not one person spoke to me. And I remember thinking, I'll show you lot. You know what I mean? I want to go on and win this now. And I just thought to myself, there was no pressure. I had absolutely no pressure. I was just so buzzing to be selected for a major tournament. You know, I cracked it. I dreamt of representing England in a big tournament like that. You know, watching Courtney Fryer and Aldie Harrison win gold in 98. It was just, I was just buzzing. And I went on to win gold, which was amazing. And my record then for England was quite impressive. I had 7 fights for England and 2 gold medals. So I was flying.
Yeah, but I was going to touch on that, because your first defeat in an England vest, right? It was at Hilton. It weren't long after you come back from the Commonwealth, and I watched it back in a week. Yeah. Timothy Bradley, right? 5'6", yeah. Stocky as you hell, as you like, strong as you like. I mean, you looked jaded in that performance. Was it the impact of the Commonwealth Games?
Yeah, and the holiday to the Magaluf after. if I'm honest, like, I'd moved up to welter then, and I should have beaten him easy, in my opinion. No disrespect to him, but I took my foot off the gas a little bit. I weren't really training that much, and I'll have to be honest, I couldn't believe I'd won the Commonwealth Games. And the coaches at England said, if you don't fight against America on this show, you will lose your Sport England funding. And I was never going to do that. And I probably shouldn't have fought, but you know, 4 2-minute rounds, I thought I'd had enough in me to win, and I didn't. But what a career he went on to have, you know, what a fighter, and what a man. I actually see him and Andre Ward at the O2 not that long ago. I can't remember what show it was. I think it was Lomachenko Campbell, and we had a good chat about it. And when I see him, he goes, "Hey, Parker," he goes, "You nearly had me, man. You nearly had me. And I got you in that last round, though." And he did.
Superb. And Darren, just moving on now, away from your England days and your amateur days, you turned professional in 2004. I mean, at that time, how did you choose your team and promoter?
It was quite simple, to be honest. When I was down at Repson, probably a year, it would have been about a year before I turned pro, so it would have been 2003. Tony Sims was down the Repson, and I got introduced to him, and his business partner at the time was Tony Burns Jr., Tony Burns' son. That they had a management outfit together. You know, Tony Burns would deal with the management side of things, and Tony Sims obviously being a trainer. And I got introduced to him, and they sponsored me a mini car, and it was basically, I didn't sign nothing. It was just, look, when you're ready to turn pro, have a chat with us first. And I started training with Tony before I'd even turned pro. And he was instrumental in my career, Tony. He had to put up a lot with my mood swings, with obviously what happened to my brother, with injuries. He knew how to get the best out of me, Tony. And he was friends with Mick Hennessy at the time. So we signed with Mick. It was a verbal contract. And that, you know, I have no regrets whatsoever. It was brilliant. It was a great for me because Mick Hennessy had Carl Froch, the likes of Dave Walker, Matthew Furwell, all under his banner. So we do a lot of sparring with him. And yeah, I had a good start to my pro career.
Yeah, and just to think, you know, you mentioned verbal contract there. I mean, you know, in today's sport, you wouldn't even hear of anything like that.
No, you wouldn't. And you know, I'm not greedy. There was that trust element there with Tony knew Mick, and I mean, I guess I'll touch later on why I moved to Edion. But yeah, it was. I can only thank Mick for all his help and for the fights he got me and for the titles I won. It was a good journey early on.
Yeah, I mean, in 2007, sorry, Mark, in 2007, I mean, you went on to become Commonwealth champion, beating the Aussie Ben Crampton at your call. I mean, then in 2008, you know, the opportunity came, you must have been buzzing for this, you know, British champion, you know, yeah. Not too far from where we record in Brentwood, the Brentwood yeah. Centre. Yeah. I mean, against Danny Butler, I mean, that was a quick rise through the pro game. I mean, can you kind of sum up those moments, you know, becoming Commonwealth and then British? Yeah. I mean, how did that feel?
Well, it was what happened before that made those wins even more special. Obviously, I lost my brother and I took a long time out of the game, just under a year, which, you know, when you're sort of flying and you've got good momentum, it's a long time out the ring. And I just, something was missing on that, and without going into too much, I just decided to honour everything in my brother's name. So I thought every title I win moving forward would be dedicated to my brother. So those titles were very, I mean, every title I won after was very special. You know, the Commonwealth title to almost do a double, if you like, win the Commonwealth Games and then win the Commonwealth title as a pro was good. And yeah, the British for me was very special. A little bit gutted that I never went on to defend it or anything because I ended up fighting for the European then. But to win the British title was fantastic. What a prestigious title. And I kind of, after winning the British, I have to be honest, a little content because I dreamt of winning that title as a kid, and I'd done it, but it still weren't enough. You know, I still thought I had a bit more in me, and yeah, I just I carried on going. By the time I won the British, I started really starting to feel my hip, my first hip, and going into the ASI Belgium, I'll probably take in nicking one of your questions here, but the fight after, I'm pretty sure, was Belgium, and it was for the European title. I think it was. I think that was the one after the Butler. Well, I can't really remember now.
I think it was, Darren. It was April 20. It was April 10. It was April 2010, and you are nicking one of our questions because I was going to say, like, you took the European belt in a tough 12 round fight. And I mean, you can sum it up yourself. And then after that fight, you vacate the Commonwealth and you were due to fight Matthew Macklin. Now, you touched there on your hip and it sounds like you picked up that injury. And obviously, this fight was being labelled as like the Battle of Britain at the time.
Yeah. Well, what happened? I won the British and then I started feeling my hip. It was actually around the time I was in Ireland sparring with Froch before he fought Pascal for his first world title. And I felt my hip. And if I'm deadly honest, I see who I was fighting for the European. I looked at his record and I know he gave Andy Lee a nightmare of a time when they fought. But I just thought I'd bash him, if I'm honest. And I neglected my running because I was in so much pain. I thought, look, what I won't do, I'm not going to aggravate it. I just won't do the running. And I didn't replace the running with any other training, which I did do later on in my career. And I just went into the fight thinking I was going to bulldoze him and win easy. And after six rounds, I absolutely slaughtered him. And then he come back firing the second half. And it was a close fight, to be fair, but it was just purely because I ran out of gas. So after winning the European, I had my first hip operation. And that kept me out for a while, which obviously ruined the chance of me fighting Matthew Macklin, which is a shame because I never really got to have a big domestic fight. But so be it. And then obviously come back and I fought with the European again. I've been out the ring. I don't know how long it was this time, but a year, it must have been near on a year or something like that. So then I fought Sparta and it was a tough fight and I won the European again. I think a lot of pundits and people in the game broke me off against Sparta because I've been out the ring so long and they knew I was in there with a tough guy. And yeah, I don't, hold on, sorry, it's my daughter. And yeah, I just I think a lot of people wrote me off, so I ended up winning the European again, which was good. And then it was the big one. It was the big one against Martinez.
Yeah, but before we get onto that, Darren, I want to say, you know, in between this European and Macklin talk, you decide to switch promoters. So you're leaving, you know what I mean, you're moving across to Matchroom now. Obviously, you mentioned Eddie Hearn there before. I mean, you know, was the switch... You know, was it more because you wanted the bigger fights and you weren't getting them under the current promoter? I mean, how did that come about over to Matchroom?
I mean, it was quite simple, if I'm honest. It was down, you know, TV generates money and Mick had lost his TV deal. And, you know, as a fighter, you only get one crack at this career. You know, you don't get second chances and you've got to be selfish sometimes. And Mick had lost the TV and it was, do we hang about and hope that he gets TV or do we move to someone like Eddie? I was Eddie's first signing, who has got ties and deals with Sky Sports. He had Price Fighter on Sky Sports. So it was just, you know, it was a no-brainer, really. You know, it was... I had to think of myself. I had to think of... I wanted the big fights. I wanted to be on the biggest stage. And Eddie could offer that. And that's all it was, really. And like I say, I had no regrets. And I thank Mick for everything he'd done for me. But you get one crack and you've got to be selfish. You've got to think of yourself sometimes. You know, I never done any harm by anyone. I never ripped anyone off or done anything. All I was doing was thinking of my career. And like I say, I've seen Mick since and I've thanked him for all he'd done for me. And it wasn't, there was no nasty ending or anything like that. But Eddie wanted to get kind of big in the game. So I was his first signing. And off the back of that, Kell Brook and Carl Froch signed. And I guess the rest is history. Look where Eddie is now. And we, you know, we got on really well, me and Eddie. He's a good crack. He gets a bit of stick. He's sort of like the pantomime villain at times. But he's so passionate. I think you see that against... when I won the title against Gil, you know, it means a lot to him. And a lot of people say, yeah, because he's thinking of the money, but it's more than that. It means more than that to Eddie.
No, and it does, I'm sure over the years, you guys have had a great relationship and it does show that way. And going back just to the Martinez fight that you touched on there, Darren, just briefly, that came along in October 2011. Now, you suffered your first defeat as a professional, obviously, with the 11-round stoppage. I mean, Martinez at the time, he was a pound-for-pounder. I think people tend to forget that, the Argentinian.
Yeah, 2-3.
Yeah, I mean, he was up there. And, I mean, it was obviously a tough fight for you. But at the time, did you feel at your very, very best? Were you, you know, 100% and going into it, everything, you know, how was camp and everything else? Just to get a bit of an insight,
I'm
really.
Honest, you know, I was in good nick. I would never have any excuses. Look, like I told you before there, you know, like the Danny Butler fight, I was feeling my hips and I was struggling with injuries. People forget that. They look at my injury and think, oh, you know, it was just the last fight against Felix Sturm. It weren't. It was my injuries go back way before. When anyone's been in the game as long as I have, you know, fighting for 23 years, you're going to get injuries. With Martinez, it was more mental, I think. Though I'd been in the ring sparring with elite level fighters, you know, Carl Froch, Kez, all of these sort of guys. I've sparred with everyone, Howard Eastman, elite level fighters. I've never actually fought an elite level fighter as a pro. And I just, if I'm deadly honest, I don't think I truly believed in myself. I knew I could have a go, and I knew I could push him all the way. But I, you know, it is a bit of a regret, if I'm honest. Though I'm not saying I would have beaten him. I think if I'd have believed in myself a bit more, I could have pushed him. I could have pushed him harder. But look, all things happen for a reason. I learned so much from that fight, and I've no doubt that the experience I gained against Fighting Martin has helped me go on to beat Gil in the manner I'd want to have won. So I try not to give myself a hard time, but I do think I could have caused potentially one of the biggest upsets in British boxing.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously after that bout, you go on, back to Tony Sims, you rebuild, you get the opportunity after you beat, I mean, I should mention the first round stoppage of Simone Rotaldo as well in 2013, in between that. And then you get your world title attempt again, this time for the IBF world middleweight belt, as you touched on there, Daniel Gill. Now, you become the world champion on a split decision. You did capture the nation's heart that night. I watched it that night. You did. I mean, 100%. Everyone felt the emotion for you at the time. I mean, obviously, you mentioned your brother earlier.
Yeah.
I mean, just what was it all like? Because, I mean, obviously, this you had accomplished, I'm sure, everything that you'd set out to achieve.
I mean, how do I put it into words? I'm still speechless. Like, I cannot believe it. As a kid, you know, like I've said this so many times, there is nobody on the face of this earth who can like boxing more than me. You know, I can be matched, don't get me wrong, people can like it as much as me. No one can like this sport more than me. It's like another leg and arm to me. As a kid, I used to be in the kitchen shadow boxing and I would play out my career. You know, I'd be in the kitchen for about an hour shadow boxing and I'd go through all the fights and, you know, I'd be winning British, come on, and blah, blah, blah. And my world title fight, it's so funny. I would play it out the way that fight went. It was a dramatic win. You know, I'd get dropped, I'd get back up. And yeah, for me to win it in that manner in the States made it that bit more special. And it was, yeah, I can't believe it. You know, I can't believe it. I guess I can say it. And I try not to give myself, you know, too much praise, but I guess I'm proud of myself. You know, I'm proud of what I went through to get there and how hard it was at times. I'm the happiest man alive. I can't believe it. I still can't believe it. It's just, you know, I completed boxing. It's like I never thought I would, but just amazing. What a journey it was. You know, having that loss and coming back, having 14 months out after the Martinez fight, another hip operation, I nearly ruptured my biceps. It seemed like so much was against me at times. And to finally capture that title was just a special, special moment.
And obviously, Darren, we know the emotion. Obviously, when you got the decision, you collapsed to the floor, you know, floods of tears, the emotion of it. And obviously, with my brother on the podcast, we both boxed. We both travelled together in the amateur days, you know. Was it kind of closure for your brother, Gary?
Yeah, which explains the tears, if I'm honest. It was almost like letting go to some extent. Though I think about him every day, you know, it was a little bit like that. And, you know, I'm upset at the end of that fight for that reason. But it quickly turned into, you know, happiness. Happy that I was able to dedicate it to him. Happy that we'd completed it, you know, because we did it together. Once he passed away, we were on the journey together. Though I was on my own, he was always there. He always had my back, and I was able to dedicate it to him. Incredible. I would swap every single title, every single pound I've earned to have my brother back, but it's impossible. So to be able to dedicate it all to him is, you know, it makes me feel happy.
That's lovely stuff, Darren. And it really is. I mean, yeah. So, you know, credit to you and credit to your family. I mean, the next question I was going to go ask is, after the world title, you go on to defend that belt against in Germany, as you touched on earlier, against Felix Sturm. Now, you obviously an early stoppage for you. It's your second defeat as a professional. After the fight, was it immediate that you decided to retire? I mean, you were still only in your early 30s, right? And, you know, you still had time on your side, or was it the injury, or was it just that you'd accomplished everything?
It was a bit of everything. Look, I got back, I was in agony. My hip popped out, and I got back into the thing. I had all the doctors around me trying to put it in and all that. And it was, I was in agony, absolute agony. And I looked at Tony, I went, that's it, mate. I've had enough. I can't do this anymore. We cracked it, you know, we've done the lot. And, you know, Tony went, I know, mate. And my dad come in and they weren't bothered. They just wanted me to, you know, make sure I was all right. But I was content. I didn't want to do it anymore. People say, oh, you robbed, you know, some people, idiots, say, you know, you robbed the fans. They come out and they watched you out there and you went into the fight injured. Tell me a fighter that don't go into the ring injured and I'll tell you they're lying. Because everyone's carrying knocks. And I was carrying serious injuries. But I was carrying serious injuries before the Gill fight, before all these other fights. And I thought I had enough to win it. And I watched that back probably 3 years after for the first time. And I was proud of myself because I got back up even though I was in agony. And I was still letting my hands go and Tony threw the towel in. And, you know, I kind of, in some ways, one of my proudest things watching that back because I knew how much my body was, you know, how much pain I was in, and I still carried on, but I was just content. You know, I compare me in that fight compared to the me who fought Daniel Gill, and they're two different people, but we're only human. I can only be honest and say I was just content and plagued with injuries, and just when you don't have to get punched in the face anymore, it ain't nice. You know, as much as I love boxing, I didn't want to get whacked anymore. I didn't want to have to do the training anymore. I'd completed what I set out to do. But it was an awful lot of money. I still thought I could win, and it is what it is. You know, it's a shame I couldn't win, but I think sometimes you've got to understand it is only a sport. I give it my all. I'm proud of myself, and, you know, that's that. The rest is history.
Yeah, but that's one thing I was going to say, Darren. You know, you're very honest there in you knew when it was time to quit. You know, your body had given up. Potentially, maybe you're not your love for the sport. We can tell you love the sport, but you know that desire to go again. Do you think a lot of today's boxers, you know, they go for that one more fight, and then that's when things really can go wrong?
Well, look, everyone's circumstances are different. Everyone does it for different reasons. So I can't comment on other people's desire to have that one more and do this and do that. Everyone's different. I love the sport. Like I say, can't be matched, my love for this sport, but my love competing in boxing had completely gone. I become soft and weak and I just didn't want to do it anymore. But everyone's different. Everyone has reasons to continue to have that one more. Is it, you know, for their money? Is it, they still believe they can do it. And I think that's why you've got to have good people around you, people to advise you and let you know, look, enough's enough. And I'm so fortunate that I have so many people, and I had so many people, good people, people I trust around me to advise me to do the right thing. And I think that can be missing with some fighters out there today, that they just don't have enough people looking after them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was going to ask a question, actually. So, you know, you've left, you obviously left the game, you've kept your health, you know, you don't even look like, you know, you've been punched, to be fair. Do you think that in the pro game now, there's too much sparring, Darren? Because, you know, like, I can understand it when people are in camp, there's continuous sparring. But outside of that, are these guys sparring too much, do you think?
It's a good point. Sparring, you know yourself, lad. Sparring is it's the closest thing to the sport, so it's a necessity. You have to spar to get your time and your distance, etc., and practice out certain things. And I think if sparring is done correctly, and you know, I think it can bring you on to another level. Like me sparring with Carl Froch, me sparring with Danny Appy, they brought me on to another level. So it's important, but you're right, definitely too much sparring is not good. So a balance is required. You need a good coach that knows how much, you know, each individual's different as well. If I'm deadly honest, I hate sparring. I couldn't stand it. I hated it. I never wanted to spar really that much. I wanted to save it all for the ring, but it's crucial. And Tony knew when to rein it in or when who I should spar with, etc. Some people love it, so you need to it needs to be monitored. But you're right; it's look, at the end of the day, you're getting whacked in the head, so it can't be good, can it?
No, absolutely. I mean, now let's talk about obviously life after boxing. I mean, it seems like you're a busy guy. I mean, you're active not only as a pundit on Sky Sports, but you've also dabbled in a bit of coaching. You know, you took on David Allen mate. I don't know who's David White.
He was my second pro opponent, David White.
Oh, so really?
That might be the reason.
Maybe. But, I mean, you coached him for two fights, right? You took him on the Brown fight and the Price fight. I mean, is coaching something you want to pursue, or was it just to kind of dip your toe in? No.
No. Look, Dave approached me. We met each other at one of the Matchroom shows, and we hit it off, become mates, and he was pestering me, saying, come on, train me, because I was always giving him advice. And he asked me before the Lucas Brown fight, come and train me. And I went, look, come on, let's use this as an experiment. I'll see if I want to do it. And all went well. We won that fight. And the Price fight was a little bit different. The dynamics changed a little bit. We was training in Champneys and London. And he got the needle a little bit with travelling down so much. He didn't really want to do it. So logistically, it didn't work. And to be honest, it's not for me yet. I love what I do in the media side of things. I love doing what I do there. I love that. That's as far as I want to go with boxing at the minute. I don't never say never. Like I say, I'd love to train down at the Repton and help the kids out down there. But I think as a pro coach, for me right now, it's not anything I'm interested in. You've got to have that discipline. You've got to be getting up in the morning with your fighters. You've got to be, you know, so switched on, coming up with game plans, be there doing, holding the pads. I'm not ready to have that discipline back in my life yet, if I'm deadly honest. You know, I've had it my whole life. And I love Dave. I love the sport, but coaching's off for me at the minute.
And what do you think of his new partnership with Jamie Moore?
Brilliant. Jamie's a top man. He knows the sport inside out, and he'll look after Dave. I know he will, as will his management team, MTK. You know, they will look after Dave. And that's all I can ask for, really. He's my mate. He always will be my mate. But Jamie's he's a top lad. He's a brilliant coach. So I really, really hope the relationship works and Jamie can extract what I've seen in the gym with Dave. Because if I'm deadly honest, Dave Allen, for me right now, is a gym fighter. Because I've seen him do some brilliant things in the gym. But he just, for whatever reason, and we can't answer this question, do we? We don't know if it's pressure, stress, nerves. There's something that happens that creates what we know as a gym fighter. And I hope Jamie can pull it out of Dave Allen, because Dave's a really good fighter. He really is.
Yeah, and just moving on to Matchroom now, after talking about Dave there, Darren, I mean, everyone, like professional boxers, need to get back to work, right? Like everyone else in every other industry.
You've got a job, lad. You've got a job for me, lads.
Yeah, you'll be back on Sky's football soon, don't worry about that. But no, I was just going to say that, you know, Eddie Hearn and Matchroom have got, you know, ideas, and I've seen it in the press recently and all over social media, that he wants a behind closed doors event at the headquarters of Matchroom in Brentwood. I mean, honestly, do you think he can pull this off? And yeah, if he can, when would you expect it to happen?
I do know a little bit, but I can't say a great deal, and I ain't being that person that has to say that, but there's a few hurdles still to be managed, but I think they're hoping for mid sort of July time. And it sounds if they can get the green light and they can get over these hurdles, that'd be very exciting. And it would see it run through, I think, for quite a few weekends, and look, it'd be great. I'll be involved, because I do three build up shows with Matchroom. We do one during the press conference, one during the weigh-in, and one, it's like a preview show, a build-up show just before the fight. So it'd be great to be involved, if if we do get the green light. But look, at the end of the day, I'm hopeful that this pandemic, this epidemic, whatever you want to call it, will sort of, the numbers will start dropping, which we're seeing already, and things will start getting back to normal. And once that happens, we'll start having the shows again. But look, if anyone can pull off these behind closed doors fights, it's Eddie Hearn.
And I mean, how do you think the landscape's going to look, Darren, you know, post, you know, post lockdown, you know, where in the past journeymen, you know, they were nicking a few quid, picking up not pointless fights, but, you know, for the up and coming pros. I think now the journeyman might fall away. It's going to be more and more 50-50 fights, surely.
Yeah. Well, the fights I know they're talking about for these behind closed doors are brilliant. Let me tell you that. They're mouth-watering. They're really, really, they are, like you say, 50-50 clashes. I think where careers have been put on hold for a while, fighters are going to want to get back into big fights as soon as possible. Look, if it was me personally, I can in some ways relate to how a fighter's feeling now because of the injuries I had and the stop-start career I had at times. And once I got back from them injuries, I just wanted to get straight back into the biggest fight possible to get my career back on track. And I think, I can't think of one fighter that would want a nice, easy warm-up. I think they just want to be eager to get straight back in there. So I think matchmaking is going to be very easy moving forward. I just think the biggest obstacle now is it will be getting the numbers, getting, you know, back to the 90,000 at Wembley Stadium again. People being, you know, not so frightened of this, you know, there being a second phase of this virus, etc., which is rightly so. We've all got to be switched on. We've got to think of the vulnerable and we've all got to be smart. But I think that will be the obstacle is, you know, selling tickets is a big part of boxing, especially for the small hall shows. But I do think we're, you know, especially next year, I think there's going to be some really big, big fights on some really big shows full of 50-50 fights. You know, I do think you're right, yeah.
And talking about big fights, do you think Joshua versus Fury could be made next year? And yeah, if so, Darren, as a pundit, I mean, how would you see that fight going between the pair of them?
I do think it will happen. I hope it's a case of sooner rather than later. You know, for instance, I was in Vegas for the Mayweather-Pacquiao. That fight happened far too late. But I do think it will happen. I don't know if it'll happen next. If I was Pulev, I wouldn't step aside. Sod that. I'd want to, you know, I'd want to get in there with the chance to win a title. So, I hope it happens. It will happen. It will happen. This is when it will happen. And if or when it happens, rather, for me, I've got to go Tyson Fury, if I'm honest. I just think he's the more complete fighter. I'm not saying AJ couldn't beat him, and I'd be far from surprised if he was to beat him. I just think after that last performance against Wilder, he's shown that he can do everything. He's awkward. He can fight the back foot. He can come forward and use that 19 stone weight he's got. He's powerful. He's just got a bit of everything. And, you know, I right now, currently, I can't bet against him. But there's not one heavyweight I think he can't beat. I think he can beat the lot. I think he can personally, you know, don't get me wrong, it's hard to compare eras, but I think he could go on and be like a Marciano. I think he could, though he's got that one blemish, if you like, the draw against Wilder, which never was. I think he could go on and stay unbeaten if he keeps his desire and he keeps injury free and he, you know, he stays switched on. I think he's got the ability to go on unbeaten, although he's got that draw, but, you know, you know what I'm saying? I'm being.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good insight there. And always, we like to finish with a question with all, you know, all our guests. I mean, you know, looking back on your career, I mean, I think we know the answer, but yeah. I mean, what was your biggest achievement?
Yeah. I mean, each one was special in its own way, but without a shadow of a doubt, winning that world title for my brother, you know, and creating that little bit of history. That's only a small piece of history, but I like to think that the Barker name now will be remembered in the boxing game for some time, and that makes me happy. So that was a massive, massive achievement not just for me in sport, but in my life. Other than the birth of my children and obvious things like that, but as far as my life's concerned, my life, that I can't, I will never beat that. In my opinion, a personal achiever, I can't be beaten. Like, again, look, I've speechless. I can't hardly get the words out. You never understand what that means to me.
No, and Darren, honestly, well, firstly, I'd like to thank you for today from everyone at Phoenix 98 FM and On The Ropes. Really do appreciate your time. It's been wonderful catching up with you. We could sit here for another hour and just, you know, let it flow and talk boxing, because we love boxing as much as you love boxing. Yeah. So it's been absolutely wonderful catching up today. Look, I wish you all the best for the future with your punditry, with your, you know, your businesses and everything else.
Thank you.
Priority at this time as well is that we wish you the best health as well, because, you know, we're all in this and we've all got, you know, we've all got to get through it.
Yeah. Again, lads, I really appreciate your time. Thank you for all your hard work and everything you're doing. The same goes for everyone else out there who's, you know, making this such a great sport. Everyone's sort of everyone's little bit of help and the exposure that you give fighters, the smaller fighters, etc. It goes a long way. And, you know, if I was with you lads, I'd give you all a pat on the back, because you're playing your part in making this the greatest sport in the world. And yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure to be on the show, lads. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Darren.
See you later.
Thank you. Take care, mate.
Take care, mate. Charlie, what a wonderful bloke, eh? Top man. Loves his boxing. You know, our first world champion on the show. Just amazing stuff, right?
Absolutely, Mark. Really enjoyed that interview. Really, really enjoyed it. And the honesty as well. You know, you don't get that in today's sport. A lot of the boxers now, they're not that they're up themselves. You know, I think social media has really elevated, you know, not a selfish mentality, but, you know, a persona, right? And it's so refreshing, you know, to hear honesty in an interview and a former world champion. You know, you don't get that.
No, absolutely. And I like the fact that he touched on there, he wants to go back to Repton. That's a burning desire for him. And I hope he goes to do it, because we've spoke about this and what communities need in the past on many shows and podcasts, that, you know, if these guys can give something back to the local communities, it does inspire, you know, the young local people to enter boxing rings or to enter youth clubs, that they're needed. They're an integral part of society. And that's what we need.
Absolutely, Mike. You never know. A young lad might be listening to this interview, might be listening back. And if, you know, if this can inspire a couple of young lads just to get into the sport, you know, someone like Darren who made the decision, you know, to get into it. And then he was mature enough to realise that he needed something else. So he flipped clubs over to Repton, you know, and he didn't fear that. And he'd done all that travelling, you know, off his own back on the underground. You know, you never know. We might inspire the next AJ or the next Darren Barker, right? Just by putting this show out. So I'm really pleased with that interview and, you know, I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
Well, hopefully our listeners will love that, because I think Darren, as you touched on there, is a very honest guy. He, you know, he says it how it is. He did make that journey all the way across, you know, London at the time he made that decision. And he's reaped the rewards from it. A lot of hard work, a lot of dedication. He's had, you know, the loss of his brother to deal with, and not only him, his father, you know, his father and mother of the family have had to deal with that. You know, just a wonderful, wonderful story from Darren Barker, and, you know, and he will be remembered in British boxing history for sure. And I'm pretty confident about that too.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, he's a clued up guy as well. You know, his punditry work on Sky Sports, you know, he knows exactly what he's talking about. He obviously loves the sport. He knows the game inside out, and, you know, he's not going anywhere. He's certainly still involved in the sport, and long may that continue.
Absolutely. Well, guys, hope you enjoyed that, and we'll be back very soon with another special lockdown edition of On The Ropes. See you soon, guys. Take care.